Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Finals!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
We're back for another brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. And yesterday, we talked a lot of college football. I got to continue the college football talk today, at least for a segment, because the brand new AP Top 25 rankings are out. And it's good news for the Utah Utes. They're not in the top 25 just yet, but they're eking closer. I think another week or two of solid play for the Utes, and they may actually be in the top 25. We'll talk a little bit about that later on in the show. Also, I want to continue the conversations on high school football. Typically, Tuesday and Wednesday, we bring on Coach John Famala or Coach Josh Huntsman. Today, we are going to focus heavily on the Emory Spartans. They're sitting at 0-3. They have one more game before region play begins. It is an important one this Friday. They take on the Manti Templars. There's some history between these two teams. At least over the last 8-9 years, Manti has had Emory's number. We'll see if the Spartans can flip those fortunes on Friday. So we will talk to Coach Huntsman a little bit later on in the show. And now we are under 25 games remaining in the Major League Baseball regular season. And last night, we had some fireworks. If you're a New York Met fan or a Colorado Rocky fan, you were definitely happy. The Mets haven't had much to play for this season, but Jacob deGrom has been historical. And he was historical again last night, and the Mets topped the Dodgers 4-2. And the reason I say if you're a Rocky fan, you're happy. As we sit right now, the Colorado Rockies are in first place in the National League West. I do want to talk about the Rockies a little bit later on in the show as well. So plenty on the national sports front. Let's dive into the Major League Baseball scene. Standing update, the Atlanta Braves, not much has changed. 4 games up on the Philadelphia Phillies. The Chicago Cubs, 4 games up on the Milwaukee Brewers. The Rockies, 1/2 game up on the Dodgers. And as the wild card standings sit right now, the Dodgers, 1 game back of the St. Louis Cardinals. 1 game back. The Arizona Diamondbacks, 2 full games back. So Milwaukee has 1. St. Louis has another. The Cardinals have lost 3 consecutive games. They've played 500 baseball over the last 10. Not boding well for the Redbirds. We'll see if they can right the ship. In the American League, nothing's going to change here. I think it's set in stone. Red Sox have the AL East. Indians have the AL Central. The Astros, 2.5 up on the A's. The A's have the number two wild card spot. The Yankees have the number one wild card spot. And I'm telling you right now, the American League is set. I don't see much parity there. With that being said, we'll take a look at the schedule because there are some major playoff implication games in store for us today. No day baseball. We had plenty of that yesterday. Today, pretty much everything is in the evening now. 5:05 tonight, John Gant will take the mound for the Cardinals, and they are on the road taking on the Washington Nationals. The Nationals are at 500, 69-69, clinging to their playoff lives. It's a long shot at best for the Nationals to get there, but if they handle their business against the Cardinals, they could make a statement. Big game tonight for both teams, more importantly the Cardinals, as they try to hold off the Dodgers or the Rockies or the Diamondbacks in the wild card chase. That game is set for 5:05. Also in the 5 o'clock hour, we get the Reds and the Pirates. The Rays take on the Blue Jays. The Indians, they play host to the Royals. We get the Phillies and the Marlins. Jake Arrieta is going to take the hill tonight for Philadelphia. Big game here for the Phillies. Arrieta 9-9 with a 3.5 ERA. Philadelphia trying to keep pace with the Atlanta Braves. Don't count them out of the wild card race just yet. They're 4 back of the Cardinals, and right now they're taking on the Marlins. 5:35 tonight, Red Sox Braves. I'm not going to say that's a potential World Series matchup. I guess it is a potential World Series matchup. But the Braves have really overshot their expectations all season long. I really like this team. They're a lot of fun. Sean Newcomb is on the hill tonight for Atlanta going up against Rick Porcello. As far as playoff implication goes, the Red Sox are set. They're golden. The Braves, for the most part, I don't see the Braves squandering a four-game lead with 24 games to play. But it is a fun matchup, the Red Sox and the Braves. We're talking about the elite team in the American League against one of the elites in the National League. I like it. It's a fun baseball matchup tonight. 6:05, we get the Angels and the Rangers. The White Sox take on the Tigers. 6:10, big game. Wade Miley going up against Mike Montgomery. The Cubs are on the road to take on the Brew Crew at Miller Park. Big game for the Brewers. The Cubs have an opportunity to strengthen their lead at the top of the division, playing some of the best baseball in the league right now. The Cubs have been lights out. Fun matchup there. 6:10 tonight, we get Minnesota at Houston. The Giants take on the Rockies. This is such a marquee stretch for Colorado. The next 20 games are against either the Giants, Dodgers, or the Diamondbacks for Colorado. And I have next to no faith in Colorado, mostly because of their pitching rotation. They can prove me wrong. Rockies have a stretch in which they can really make some headway in the National League West. If they win 15 out of their next 20 games, Rockies have that NL division. They have the NL West. Now, is it possible for that? Is it likely they're going to go 15-5? No, but that's a stretch that could win them the National League West. Important stretch for the Rockies. It begins tonight. Nightcap game, 7:40. The Padres take on the struggling Arizona Diamondbacks. Robbie Ray will try to change the fortune of Arizona. They dropped 3 of 4 from the Dodgers over the weekend. That's a problem. They lost again last night, and the Padres haven't played great baseball. 29 back of the San Diego Padres, but an opportunity for them to play spoiler at Chase Field. 8:05 tonight, nightcap baseball. We get the Yankees and the A's. The Orioles will take on the Marlins, and then the Dodgers trying to right their wrongs last night against the Mets. Rich Hill will take the mound for LA. Let's talk NFL football. Over the weekend, the long extended weekend, 3 quarterback decisions were announced. Buffalo, first off, nobody has any expectations for the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen is going to be fine. I think. I see the potential. He's a project. Everyone knew he would not be starting for the Buffalo Bills. Nate Peterman is going to be the starting quarterback for Buffalo. That decision was made official over the weekend. A couple of other news and notes as far as starting quarterbacks go. The New York Jets, I think they got a steal with Sam Darnold. I think he's the real deal, and apparently head coach Todd Bowles does as well, because Sam Darnold will be the starter for the New York Jets on Monday Night Football as they take on the Detroit Lions. The Jets were so close last year, and we've talked a lot about the Jets in the offseason because it's a pretty compelling storyline. It really is. This is a team that was close. I think they made improvements defensively. You bring in Tremaine Johnson. You have a number one defensive back. You spend a pick on Sam Darnold early on. He was the best quarterback on the team of the preseason. He earned it. He earned the starting gig. This is not a scenario where there were no viable options for the Jets and their best bet was Sam Darnold. He outplayed Teddy Bridgewater, who was great in the preseason, and the Jets were able to flip him and get a pick. He outplayed Josh McCown, who was the starting quarterback for this team last year. It's a rare occurrence for a team to have 3 options at quarterback and the best be an incoming rookie. I think Sam Darnold earned this. Todd Bowles talking about the decision to start Sam Darnold this upcoming Monday.
I don't think it's very difficult. I mean, he's been playing football all his life. He's not just coming fresh out of the womb and just coming grabbing the ball for the first time. He's been in crowds. He's seen crowds, and he's been playing football. And I don't think it's that big of a deal. It's always going to be loud in the dome, and Detroit's a tough place to play. I get that, but he just has to play football. He'll be fine.
Todd Bowles, not the only coach outside, of course, of Buffalo, talking about why he has named an individual a starting quarterback. The Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles, they'll be rolling with Nick Foles as the starter for Week 1 this Thursday on KOAL, actually, when the Eagles take on the Atlanta Falcons. It will be Nick Foles, and that should not be a surprise to anyone, because Carson Wentz is not ready, and there is a reason why Philadelphia did not ship out Foles in the offseason. To me, it has nothing to do with Philadelphia thinking that Nick Foles is their guy. Has everything to do with the fact that he's on a favorable contract, and the future, Carson Wentz, who was an MVP candidate before he went down last year, is not ready, and they are not going to rush him back. The Eagles are in a great spot. Nick Foles is the starting quarterback. for week one. Doug Peterson talked about that decision.
When I say it's the doctors, it's Carson, it's Nick, it's a collaborative effort. I've been in conversation with these guys for a long time. This is why sometimes my emotions get kind of stirred up, because a lot of times you don't know what's going on behind the scenes, and nor do you need to know. Carson's in a great spot, man. He's supportive. He understands. He knows exactly where he's at. He works every single day to get back on the field, and that's all I can ask for.
To me, that's an absolute no-brainer. You got to make sure that your future Carson Wentz is back and he's 100% healthy. I think here's some good news coming out of the NFL. I love uniforms. Uniforms fascinate me, especially in the NFL. As far as Nike goes, sometimes I wonder what the hell they're doing with some of the uniforms. The Jacksonville Jaguars have a uniform overhaul, and it includes dumping the two-tone helmet. If you ever watched a Jaguars game, it's terrible. Those helmets were awful. The gold is gone. It's so terrible. Half the helmet, the back of the helmet was gold. The front of the helmet was black. It was ugly. Those were some of the worst helmets I've ever seen. They're repainted. That gold is gone. New look uniform design for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I guess what made this story so hilarious to me is, in order to save on cost, the Jaguars just had the two-tone repainted. So they have the same helmets. They didn't get new helmets. Same helmets. Tom Coughlin, who is vice president of football operations, didn't like the way it looked. He said, we're changing it. All black helmets. Once again, a gloss black helmet for the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's a funny story. Coughlin didn't like the two-tone helmets. He said, we're changing it. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Again on the show today, a lot of football talk. We're going to talk to Coach John Famala with the Emory Spartans. Also, we are going to talk AP Top 25. Not a lot of changes, but we have a new-looking Top 10. A couple of teams move up. A few teams move down. We'll talk Florida State and Va Tech last night. That was a terrible performance for Willie Taggart and his quarterback DeAndre Francois. Where does that leave Florida State? Out of the top 25, obviously. Who are some other teams that drop drastically? We'll go over the AP Top 25 as well. It's a Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You watch the games. You follow the team. You wear the colors with pride. And you have questions, and only one man can answer them. Get the answers to the tough questions.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. Talk some more high school football. This past weekend, the Emory Spartans falling to Pace, a highly entertaining game. First half was super competitive. Emory falls 31-7, led 7-0 for about 22 of the first 24 minutes of the ball game. Had a 7-6 lead until the final seconds of the first half. Like I said, a very, very competitive game. Payson wore Emory down, pulled away late. Spartans are now 0-3. You can get your complete game recap at CastleCountryRadio.com, and we're going to talk about that and what lies ahead this Friday as Emory takes on the Manti Templars. Joining us over the phone right now, we have Coach John Famala. Coach, as always, a pleasure.
Hey, appreciate having me on, Jordan.
As always, Coach, definitely. Let's talk about Friday's contest. A road loss to the Payson Lions, a game in which you guys controlled for the first, 22 minutes of the contest before Payson put up two late touchdowns in the first half. And from that point on, it seemed like they gained control and they never let up.
Yeah, I mean, we started off well out of the gates. We give up that touchdown right before the half. Like I say, they scored two there, but one before the half really hurt, and so go down 14-7 rather than 7-7 at half. And they're a big physical team, and the second half they got away from passing the ball and just kind of running it right at us. And a big physical team, and we got a little overwhelmed on size, and so that's kind of how it ended up.
I kind of felt like there was some fatigue, Coach, within the team. At least that's the way it looked later on in the third quarter. Seemed like you guys were able to kind of handle what they wanted to throw at you offensively for those first two quarters. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. I mean, we were a little gassed. Again, I got a lot of young kids that, played a game on Thursday, part of a game on Thursday, and then, played Friday. And so as a coaching staff, we talked about that and figuring out a way to address that to keep our kids semi-fresh because we are young and playing a Thursday and a Friday game makes it a little bit tougher.
Defensively, what Payson threw at you guys, I didn't feel like they really overwhelmed the offense, Coach. I know 7 points, and it was kind of a short field off of the interception from Sorensen. But at the same time, I felt like you guys could move the football on this team. I mean, Kyson went over 100 yards. Rance, as far as running the football, he had like 30 yards or something like that, averaged close to 3 yards per carry. I didn't feel that Payson was dominating you guys defensively in this game.
No, first half, like I say, we were really good at moving the ball. We had a hard time moving some of their front three. I mean, they were some pretty good up front. And so that second half, I think with Jesse being a little gimped up and a little fatigued, you know, it was harder to get those guys to move. And, you know, and score dictates what you kind of do, too. And so, you know, I don't think we ran the ball as well second half just for the fact we could have a hard time moving them and then a little bit of fatigue. So, but I felt like, you know, the first half when we were fresh and we could, you know, get on guys, but we moved the ball just fine.
You mentioned Jesse not being 100%. Ashton Rowley didn't play in this game as well. And as we look at Payson on the front line, Coach, it's senior after senior. I mean, this is a veteran group. It's basically the team that we saw 3 years ago when we traveled to Payson and picked up a victory. It's kind of that same squad. At least that's kind of the way I viewed it. A lot of these kids were playing then as sophomores, and I think the experience definitely played a factor. I'm sure not having Ashton didn't help matters.
Yeah, you know, Ashton's a big part of what we do, especially up front. But, you know, they have a ton of seniors on their team, you know, and it comes in ebbs and flows in football. And, you know, they're on an upswing right now. And so, you know, Coach Campbell and his crew is getting those kids ready. And, you know, I thought they did a good job. They're a big physical team. You know, I was impressed with them.
Coach, we always talk about Kyson Stilson, and again, one of the very few seniors on this team, and he has to shoulder a lot. I felt like in this game, Kyson, he showed a lot of determination. He took a couple of hits late in the game, and it felt, you know, went while the game was getting out of control there in the third quarter. I kind of felt like he made a couple of nice reads running the football, not forcing it through the air, but actually using his feet to pick up some yardage.
You know, that's what I appreciated about Kyson this past game is, you know, he was being competitive. He doesn't pull the ball a ton on those reads, but, you know, he felt like, hey, I need to make something happen. And, you know, he did. He got some first downs with his feet. And so, you know, I think hopefully things continue to progress with him that way. But, you know, that's what he'll give you. He's always going to be competitive no matter what the score is. And so, you know, as a kid, that he's always going to help us that way.
And we came up a little weak. It appeared to be his ankle from the broadcast booth. Is he okay following? It looked like, I guess, he just rolled his ankle.
It was an injury sustained in practice on his foot. And so, again, we're still evaluating him. Hopefully, you know, he'll be ready to go this Friday. But kind of just playing it by ear. And, you know, he seems to be fine. But you never know with those things.
We did get a chance to look at Seth Justice because of the injury. He was 2 of 4, 37 yards. I know it's a different look for Payson. They had their second unit in at that point in time in the game. But would Seth be the next man up if Kyson was unable to go on Friday?
Yeah, Seth would be. You know, he's a smart football player, heady kid, and he knows the game of football. You know, physically, he's going to continue to grow and get, you know, mature that way. That's probably the only thing. Just physically, he's not there yet. But at the same time, I think he's a smart enough kid to get the ball in hands of players that we need to help us, you know, find some success there too.
Coach, when I go over the final statistics from the game on Friday, I had Emory Dennis 3 of 11 on third down efficiency. Obviously, that's something that has to improve no matter who you're playing, be it a 4A, 3A, 2A, 1A school. Third down efficiency seemed to be an issue on Friday.
Yeah, no, we had a few. I mean, we come out that first half. I mean, I think we had 2 3-and-outs, you know, and that makes it tough. You know, you come out and you put together a drive and, you know, maybe get yourself in a position to score and or get a field goal, and, you know, it's a different ball game. But, you know, those 3 and outs, that made it tough. Again, part of it was we struggled running the ball, and so we had to, you know, pass the ball a little bit more. And, you know, they dropped 8 and rushed 3, and, you know, when Kyson could move, he moved. But at the same time, I think we have to establish the run, and, you know, I think that'll help, you know, second and 5, a 3rd and 2, something that's manageable. 3rd and 10s are tough. Playbook shrinks down, and, you know, teams can tee off on you, and, you know, that's what they did. They sent a lot of pressure and set, you know, man pressed us on our edges, and that made it tough.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach John Famolo of the Emory Sport and Football Team. Coach, we will look ahead to Friday. It's the final non-region game of the first season of the football year. You guys will get Manti. This is a pretty talented team as well. I mean, they're always well-coached, always well-prepared, and they have a quarterback that can sling the football in Kyle King. You go back to last season, Manti was a different team when he was out on the field, and I think they've proven that again this year.
Yeah, no, I mean, he throws the ball well. He's got the Thompson kid. He's a great receiver on the edge, and they're tied in. Number 7, don't know his name, but, again, another big receivers. And so, you know, that's watching him on film. They do a great job of throwing the ball, and, you know, he's kind of the kingpin. He can throw it up there, and then he's got receivers that can go and get it.
This past week, looking at the way the secondary played, I mean, there were several positives. I was thoroughly impressed with Quentin Sorensen. He had a couple of big plays, nice defensive plays down the field. Coach, where do you feel the secondary is at right now, and is this a good test for you guys moving into region play after this week?
Yeah, it is. You know, I thought Q had a great game, and, you know, he picked up from where he left off and Grand, and it was a kid that, you know, has been down the line as far as, hey, what are we looking at for, you know, safeties, and, you know, a kid that's made some plays for us the last 2 weeks, and so, you know, hopefully he'll continue to improve and see things and get better that way. I thought my corners played better. You know, with the exception of that last play for the second half, we've got to somehow nip that in the bud. But, you know, I feel confident about our secondary. We're young. We're not real big. But at the same time, these kids are gamers, and they'll get after it.
You know, I love the 3A North, 3A South non-region games. It tells us a lot, especially 3 weeks into the season. Coach, over the past 3 weeks, are you seeing that gradual improvement from this team?
Yeah, I thought we took a big step forward against that Payson team. That Payson team was a good team, but at the same time, I felt like we were competitive versus the other 2 weeks. I think we struggled out of the gates, and so, you know, we kind of dug ourselves a hole with this week or this past week. I thought we, you know, we grew up a little bit. We still got a long ways to go, but I felt a lot better where we're at and where we're going to be, you know, with the region coming up next week.
Yeah, the growing pains are obviously something that every team's going to encounter when you have so much youth on your squad. Coach, were the two touchdowns that Payson put up at the end of the first half, is that something that's a learning experience for a younger group? And what I mean by that is maybe a team that has more senior leadership, they don't really worry about that kind of thing. They can blow that kind of stuff off. But for a younger team, I mean, to have a lead the majority of the first half and then lose it right at the end of the first half, it just seems like it could be more deflating.
Oh yeah, it is. I mean, that's part of the mental challenge with young kids is you play with them. They gotta recognize, you know, you gotta play all, you know, 48 minutes. And so that's what we're realizing is, you know, we can come out of the gate strong. We just need to be able to figure out how to sustain that. And again, when the chips are laid down and you're down in the hole, you gotta continue to grind it out. And, you know, they'll learn. And I think that's what you said with the experience. I think if you had an older group, they learn how to work through that. And this younger group's trying to figure that out. And hopefully they will.
You got to teach younger kids. You got to teach them how to win, right? I mean, that's it's vague, but it's fair at the same time.
No, I mean that's where we're at. You know, we haven't had a lot of success these last couple of years, and so, you know, getting that mindset of, hey, you know, you get down, there's still opportunities to work stuff in, and not getting down in your head mentally. You know, being mentally tough to be able to withstand some of those things, and so. Yeah, you got to teach kids how to win. That's a tough one to do, especially if you haven't had a whole lot of success in the past.
No, I love at the end of this game, Coach, you guys took a timeout. You sent Brock Winter out to kick a field goal. I mean, obviously, when you have a young team on the line, there's no time like game time. I mean, you can go over reps all day long and practice if you want, but there's just something different when it's in a live-action varsity game.
Oh, yeah. No, that's you can try to rep all you can in practice, but, you know, it's a whole different animal when you get in on Friday night under the lights. And so I think my young kids are starting to figure that out. And so it's one thing they've got to figure out how to, you know, replicate and practice for themselves mentally to be able to prepare on themselves for Friday.
Coach, did you change anything knowing that you have one more game to actually get set for region when they actually start to count, or do you just try to build off of what you've done the last 3 weeks?
I think we had a great starting point, you know, with this last week, the way we played. And so I think we, you know, I don't think there's a whole lot of changes. It's personnel is where you're at, and moving kids around and or, trying to find the right combinations. And so, you know, that's probably the most adjustments that we'll make that way. And, you know, trying to figure out, you know, who's banged up, who needs the rest, and things like that for us. But so far as game plan, it's, you know, it's the same. I mean, not a whole lot of, you know, tricks and things that we can throw in the bag at that point. Football to me, you keep it as simple as you can for these kids, and then they can play fast. If you throw a lot of wrinkles and, you know, and smoke and mirrors, it's only gets you so far.
I still think this team's in fine shape, Coach. I mean, I'm looking around the 3A North, and again, I know once league play begins, things will be a little bit more clear. But, I mean, looking at the schedule, you guys don't have a lot of home games, but at the same time, the parity in this region, I think, is going to carry over from last season. I think there's a lot of opportunity for teams.
No, and I say that's what I keep telling my kids. You know, preseason, this next game, we want to win. We want to position ourselves, but you know, it's the ones that are after that that count, that position us for, you know, getting in the playoffs and getting a good seed in the playoffs, and, you know, hopefully getting a home playoffs seed is what we want.
Well, Coach, I always appreciate the time. Thank you again. Best of luck on Friday, and I know we'll talk again soon.
Hey, thanks, Jordan. Appreciate everything.
Again, that's Coach John Famalo with the Emory Spartan football team breaking down this past Friday's contest. Coming up this Friday, Emory Manti. Live coverage begins at 6:30 p.m. Kickoff is set for 7. The final non-region game of the season. It all counts after this one. Make sure you tune in or at least get out and support the Spartans. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
Hi, folks. I'm Bob Barker, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini. Now remember, help control the pet population. Have your pets spayed or neutered.
Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 a.m. Live from the Auto Forum Studios on this Tuesday edition of the show. Let's talk more college football. The first AP and Amway coaches polls have been released. I'm always curious to see where teams fall, which teams have managed to climb. We spent all day yesterday recapping week one of the college football season, but now we have the AP and top 25 coaches poll. The AP poll does in fact play into the playoff committee's decision. They say the coaches poll does not. I think that's a great thing. I don't think coaches have the time to actually sit and dissect all 25 teams. Media members, completely different. They're not running a college football program. That's what we do for a living. I like the AP top 25. Let's talk about it. Alabama, number one. They get 48 out of the 61 votes. I don't think there's any surprise there. To me, Alabama looks to be the best team in the country. Thrash Louisville. Clemson is in at number two. They get 12 first place votes. I think Clemson is a long way away from Alabama. I really do. I want to see more from Clemson. Quarterback situation's intriguing in Clemson, just like it is in Alabama. Georgia comes in at number three, does not get a single first place vote. Ohio State comes in at number four, up one spot. Wisconsin actually drops one spot, despite picking up a win, despite having who I believe is now the Heisman front runner coming out of their backfield, and getting a first place vote. Ohio State jumped Wisconsin. That's insane to me. Only 4 points separate the two. Oklahoma comes in at number six. Auburn, seven. I have a problem with that as well. Notre Dame, eight. Washington, nine. Stanford, 10. LSU is number 11. Love it. Huge climb for LSU. Moving up 14 spots after thrashing Miami. Va Tech moves up eight spots after thrashing Florida State. Penn State only drops three spots after barely sneaking by Appalachian State. West Virginia at 14, Michigan State 15. TCU, USC, Mississippi State, Central Florida, Boise State at 16 through 20. Michigan, Miami, Oregon, South Carolina, Florida round out the top 25. If you're a Utah Ute fan, the good news, the Utes actually had enough votes, which puts them at number 26, the very next team to get into the top 25. That's kind of odd, isn't it? Florida State, Texas drop from the rankings. Utah gets 71 points after beating Weber State in a game in which they trailed after a quarter, led by 7 at halftime. Utah manages to move up. Whatever, I'm fine with it. Utah gets a win next week. They get a little help. They probably will dive into the top 25. Many of the media members actually view Utah is a legitimate threat for the Pac-12 South, and I think you have to consider Utah a legitimate threat to USC in that division following what we saw in week one. Problems I have with the top 25, and I totally understand that at this point in time, these are just numbers, just a number standing next to them. If you don't take care of business over the next 11 weeks, it's irrelevant. But it's always fun to dissect and question, why is Auburn 7? Shouldn't they be higher? They were a top 10 team, and they beat another top 10 team, and I was so impressed with their defense in the red zone. I thought they were outstanding. And they only move up two spots after beating number 6, Washington, who only drops three spots. So the AP, and again, as far as the coaches' poll goes, there's some minor differences. Washington did drop to 11. But the AP actually views Washington as a legit threat because they only dipped him to 9. So they view that Washington is still a top 10 team. But they didn't think that high of Auburn's victory because they only moved Auburn up twice. I think Auburn's getting the raw deal here. Should they be ranked higher than Georgia and Alabama? Yes, they just beat a number 6 team in the country on a neutral field. Yeah, they probably should be. Notre Dame moves up 4 spots. That is the biggest jump for anyone in the top 10. We talked about Notre Dame yesterday, but it was more about Harbaugh and the struggles of Michigan. Notre Dame looked pretty good. And I'm weary on Notre Dame because, again, they have to replace 2 top 10 picks on the offensive line. That's difficult to do. I don't know if they'll ever be able to do that this season, if you're ever going to be able to make up for that. And you don't have a 1,500-yard rusher in the backfield this year. And a lot of people will question Brandon Wimbush, who I was high on 3 years ago, have since taken my foot off that pedal a little bit. Is Notre Dame a legitimate national championship contender? I don't believe so, but I do believe they can press to get into the college football playoff. Washington dips 3 spots. Are they the best team of the Pac-12? Yes, I believe they are. But the fact remains they lost to Auburn, who the AP poll believes is the 3rd best SEC team because they have Alabama and Georgia ranked ahead of them. Washington at 9, Stanford at 10. This sets up a real interesting game of the week, really. Stanford will travel to the Coliseum or play host. They're not traveling to the Coliseum. They'll play host to USC this weekend. That's number 10 versus number 17. That's the game of the week. And it is a big one for the Pac-12. Stanford gets a win there. They'll leapfrog Washington. You beat a ranked opponent regardless of what Washington does this week. Stanford will leapfrog them into the top 10. And that sets up what could be a very interesting game in about 3 weeks. Notre Dame-Stanford, where both teams could very easily be ranked inside the top 6. So there are some interesting Pac-12 scenarios to play out. Again, Utah on the cusp of getting into the top 25. And the Utes have a tough schedule this year. Starts off extremely weak. This week on KOL, this Saturday, the Utes will take on Northern Illinois. It is a road game for the Utes. After that, it gets real. They get Washington at home. That's on September 15th. And then they're at Washington State and at Stanford. So Cougar fans want to poke jokes at the Utes. Go right ahead. It's week one. BYU beat a pretty good football team, I think, in Arizona. I don't think Arizona's a joke. But the Utes, they'll make up for it in the next couple of weeks. Down game against Northern Illinois, and then it gets really, really tough from that point on. And Utah will take on Arizona at home at the beginning of October. BYU, as far as the rankings go, to me, that was an interesting school because I didn't know how the AP would actually view Arizona. I love what they have at quarterback. I don't like a whole lot more of that squad outside of what they have at quarterback. BYU got 3 votes, which ties them with Hawaii. To me, BYU deserves a little bit more love than that. I thought the Cougars actually played a pretty outstanding game against the Utes, against Arizona. Unfortunately, not getting a lot of love from the AP committee. BYU getting 3 points. And that's a look at the top 25 poll from the AP. Coaches poll, again, I don't pay a lot of attention to it just because the playoff committee doesn't really play a factor. They don't pay much attention to the coaches poll. Utah on the coaches poll, still not in the top 25. Definitely not getting the love that they got out of the AP poll. They would actually be ranked 29th in the AP poll, getting 70 votes. Oregon, Northwestern, Texas A&M, all ahead of the Utes in the coaches poll. And that's a quick look at college football's top 25. Week number 2 rankings. We got some big matchups on Saturday. We'll talk more college football a little bit later on in the week. Got a break for just a moment. We'll come back and put the final touches on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports. I had to think about that one for a moment. Yesterday was a little off. Tuesday edition of the show live from the Auto Forum Studios on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, set to wrap up this Tuesday edition of the show live from the Auto Forum Studios. Bringing Travis Anderson to help me close out the show. Travis, we'll talk NFL for a moment. Beginning of the show, I mentioned some of the quarterback choices. Todd Bowles going with Sam Darnold. Doug Peterson's going with Nick Foles. I don't think there's any big shock there. First-year head coach Steve Wilks with the Arizona Cardinals has elected to go with Sam Bradford as the number one quarterback over Josh Rosen and Mike Glennon. Surprise there?
No, I think Sam Bradford, when healthy, is the best option for the Cardinals. Sam Bradford is not a bad quarterback. Sam Bradford's just had tough luck with injuries throughout his career. So for Arizona, I agree with going with Sam Bradford.
His touchdown to interception ratio is almost 2-1.
He's a very good quarterback.
He is. I mean, he's played in 80 games. You mentioned it. Part of the problem is his durability. Set the NFL record for completion percentage back in 2016. Drew Brees broke it last year, but he completed 71% of his passes during that season. Again, he struggles to stay healthy. That's the issue. At some point in time this year, Josh Rosen will be the starting quarterback in Arizona. Apparently, he's not ready yet. I don't know if it's health issues. I know he had his durability problems at UCLA as well. I think the Cardinals are fully invested in Josh Rosen. But to me, the Cardinals are not going to contend in the NFC West. In fact, they may be the worst team of the West if Seattle is anything north of where the expectations are. They should be third. San Francisco should be second. The Rams should run away with that division, which means the Cardinals would be the fourth best team. Bring them along slowly. If you're Josh Rosen, don't get too upset, because if history is any indication, Sam Bradford's not going to be healthy long enough to hold this job throughout the year. But to me, when the Cardinals went out and they got Bradford, they got Glennon, it's proof that they want to bring Rosen along slowly.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you got to do with your Arizona. You're no win situation right now to, you know, make that jump. You're going to be at the bottom of the division, like you said, with Seattle. Those are the two worst teams in that division.
Let's look at the NFL. We have just two more days before we have the opener. Atlanta at Philadelphia, and you will be able to listen to that live broadcast right here on KOAL. Live coverage will begin at 6. Kickoff is set for 6:20. I'm looking forward to it. Atlanta and Philadelphia. As far as the Sunday matchups go, I mean, we got Pittsburgh and Cleveland, Indianapolis takes on Cincinnati, Tennessee at Miami, Minnesota, San Francisco. I don't want to go through the whole list of games. Every team obviously plays in week one. Two Monday night games, Jets, Lions, Rams, Raiders. Preseason went by in a hurry. I mean, it really did. Typically, at least in my eyes, preseason drags on. I don't know if it's because we just had a lot going on with high school football and even college football, but it seems like the NFL preseason flew by fast. And we had storylines with Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack, and both of those guys seem happy now. Donald got $87 million guaranteed. Khalil Mack got $90 million guaranteed in Chicago with a trade. Le'Veon Bell still is not reported. I guess that's the last lingering offseason storyline. How do the Steelers get this guy ready in 5 days?
I guess they're just going to have to roll him out there. How do you get a guy? You don't. So this is it. Well, he's done this before, though, right? Didn't he do it last year?
Yeah, but this is pressing it. I mean,
this is why I don't take Pittsburgh seriously, is because of things like this.
Well, ownership has a way of doing their own thing, and they don't bend to superstar pressure. They never have, and they never will.
They're not going to pay him what he wants. He's asking for a whole lot of money, and Pittsburgh's just not going to dump a truckload of money to a running back.
If he does not show up tomorrow, and it's anticipated that he will show up, and I believe he will, and I believe he will play on Sunday, and I think that Le'Veon Bell is going to have a pretty good season. I don't know if he's going to allow Pittsburgh to run him into the ground. Many, and I said this last week on the show, if I was drafting fantasy football, yeah, I would definitely not mind having Le'Veon Bell on my team because the Steelers are going to ride him into the dirt. I don't know if he allows that to happen. You know, he's definitely not playing on someone else's agenda. He's doing things the way he wants to do things. I think this could be a problem all year long for the Steelers. And to be honest with you, look, the Raiders moved on from Khalil Mack. Raider fans aren't happy about it. The Raiders did what they had to do. You and I talked about that yesterday on the show. Pittsburgh, maybe the Steelers should have at least explored this idea.
They should have. You got to look into it, because these are things that can drag on that you don't want for a team that has so much talent. They have the most talent in the league. They really do.
Offensively, I don't
offensively,
think there's any doubt.
There's nobody can match it.
I look at arsenals.
Defensively, they stink.
Well, there's something to be desired there, but when I look at offensive arsenals, you know, I love what the Rams have. I don't think it's as good as what Pittsburgh has. I think the Rams may be top three. It's not what Pittsburgh has. I look at Green Bay, one of the best quarterbacks of all time. Doesn't have the weapons that Ben Roethlisberger has.
No, they have one of the best wideouts in the league and one of the best running backs. And a top 10 quarterback.
I love what Eli Manning has, especially if Saquon Barkley is everything that he's billed to be.
Yeah, that's...
Doesn't have the options of Ben Roethlisberger, though.
No. And what a letdown for Pittsburgh last year in the playoffs against Jacksonville. And
this is a storyline. You and I had the conversation off the cuff, just going back and forth on the NFL. And I said it was going to be very difficult for New England to get back to the Super Bowl this year. I called that New England would not win the Super Bowl last year. We're getting to the point where you have to turn the chapter eventually, right?
Yeah, I'm still picking them.
But we're getting close.
We are. Okay, Brady's, it's winding down.
It is. So you start looking at teams that could knock New England off. And I told you I like Pittsburgh a lot. And I think that Steelers could be that team. I like Jacksonville as well. You had reserves about both squads.
I'm not as high on Jacksonville.
You don't like Blake Bortles?
No. Blake Bortles will not take you to the Super Bowl. Pittsburgh, yeah, I'm high on the Chargers this year. I really think the Chargers are the team that can push New England.
But I think the consensus thought is that it has to be Pittsburgh or Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring up a great point here with the Steelers. This is a storyline that could affect Pittsburgh throughout the entire season if they're not careful with it.
Yeah, and Tomlin, how much longer does Pittsburgh put up with that? Because if... Not getting.
Well, he's
to
got
the
one
Super
more year.
Yeah,
he's got one more year.
So yeah, the question marks with the Steelers. It's just too much for me to pick them.
Houston's going to be pretty good too.
Houston is going to be really good.
You know, we talk about arsenals. You got to put Houston up there towards the top. I love what they have a whiteout.
Yeah, Houston will beat New England this Sunday.
A lot of interesting football. Thursday night, it returns to KOAL. We get the Falcons and the Eagles. Offensive arsenals. Both of these teams definitely have some horses. They have some weapons. We'll talk more NFL football on the show tomorrow. I want to thank Coach John Famalo for taking out the time to join us. Also tomorrow, we'll catch up with Ryan Smith. He's the new head coach of the USU Eastern Women's Softball Squad. He will join us in studio. Should be a great conversation there as well. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.